Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.
We are rocking and rolling on this 20th day of August for Football 52. I am Brady Hull. And as always, the podcast doesn't happen without the coach, the head coach of the UNC Bears football team, Ed Lamb. Coach, always great to catch up with you, my friend.
Thanks, Brady. It's great to be here.
Man, we are, we're almost there. Next week when we do this show, it will be the first official game week, for the 2025 season. How you feeling? You ready to rock and roll?
I feel really good about where our team is at mentally, physically, their approach, their maturity, but we need to take advantage of every day. We want to really play as well as we can play, and more practice is better for that. So, you know, I think every coach right now, this time of training camp, can feel the players kind of anticipating that first game, and then, you know, some maybe have an inclination to start to save themselves a little bit and heal up, because everybody's sore and there are a lot of, you know, minor bumps and bruises. We've been fortunate so far and haven't had major injuries, but you know, and then other guys on the team, I think, you know, they're really pressing for playing time and a spot on the travel squad or a spot on the depth chart. So there are a lot of different dynamics individually with the team, and it's our job as kind of head coach, position coaches, to figure those out, meet the guys where they need to be met, and continue to motivate them for these last 10 days or so before we suit up for the first game.
It's amazing that we're at this point. It goes by pretty quickly. I mean, it seriously seems like just yesterday we were talking about spring ball, right, and getting into that stuff. And then here we are, almost a week away from your first game of the season coming up against Shadron State. It will be a home game in Greeley. So I know we're pumped up about that. And I gave a shout out last week, but man, the communications crew now, the group, they're rocking out there, coach. I went to practice on Friday. Nobody recognized me. I was a bearded man. I wore a hat because I'm tired of, I don't know what this is on my head. I can't comb it. So I wore a hat and I'm bearded. So I don't think anybody recognized me. I was incognito, but I just kind of stood off to the side. But I got a chance to talk to Brooke and a few of the staffers there. And I'm just excited. It seems like there's a different vibe that I've never experienced while working at KFKA from this crew. It's awesome.
Oh, that's fantastic to hear. I've seen it firsthand. You know, all the vehicles are in place. Everything is in place to be successful and to have a community-changing football program at UNC, except for it hasn't shown up on the field yet. And so that's really comforting to know that a lot of our opportunity to grow and make a difference in these players' lives is just it's right here in our control as a coaching staff and as players, as a team.
Yeah, no, I'm pumped for it. But coach, you guys, in the middle of all this, you know, gearing up for the first game, you're in training camp, all that, you guys got away a little bit this weekend. And again, part of that communication stuff, I'm seeing all the pictures online. It looked awesome. It looked like everybody was enjoying it. I'm surprised you guys you went on your yearly, camping trip. There's so many fishermen on this team, because so many of the players we talk to, that's like the thing that they do. It's really cool to hear that. That's like, I've noticed a lot of young people are doing that now. So talk to me about this camping trip and what the experience was like.
First, just contextually, the NCAA allows a certain number of practices over a certain number of days. And so typically with what we call the countback from game one, there is going to be a day in there somewhere other than Sundays. Most college football coaches take Sundays off. You can choose to go Wednesdays off or Thursdays or any day of the week that you want. But most coaches will kind of earmark that one day, a week on the calendar during training camp for, as a player, day off, a day of rest, and a lot of choose Sunday, as we have. And then there's one other day, and a lot of coaches will use that as, you know, an opportunity to take the boys to the water slides or the movies or something like that, and still do some team building activities. And ours has been camping, and it's just one night. It's two long days and one night. So we get up early, we practice, we lift weights, and then we headed up the mountain on yellow school buses. Shout out to District 6. They
nice.
Do a great job. I think we had seven of them because the seats are made for two children,
mm-hmm.
but not two mm-hmm. football players. And so it's one per seat. And, yeah, we rolled up there. Shocking how many guys had never slept in a tent before. And
really?
So a really cool experience to see their excitement and sometimes nerves. You know, the camp up there, the director, manager, you know, we talked about the bears and stuff like that. And so some guys were unnecessarily freaked out. And, you know, if you've been up there and around that part of the mountains, that, you know, there weren't going to be any grizzly bears and no bears that are looking to harm humans
mm-hmm.
up there. But some of our guys were pretty freaked out.
Well, yeah, I mean, the stories, you just never know,
yeah.
you know, with what you see in the media and all that stuff, random attacks or whatever. So
sure.
guys are probably freaked out, but luckily you have a lot of big dudes. You know, it's like that 100 men versus a gorilla thing.
Yeah.
I think your guys could take down a grizzly. You get everybody together. They could take them down. It'd be
sure.
fine.
Yeah.
The experience though, like you guys do something unique too.
Right.
As far as what you're eating
right.
while you're
yeah,
out there.
Yeah, sure. You want to lead me into that
yes,
one?
Yes, I love
Good
this.
Segue.
I love it. You know, some people are like, you know, they what, really? That's what they're doing up there?
Right.
I think it's cool.
Yeah.
I think it's a heck of an experience.
Yeah. So, for one of the meals, we have a full cook staff up there. It's a Boy Scout camp, the Ben De La Tour, Boy Scout camp. It's a fantastic camp and it is available for you know, private party type, rentals if the calendar fits. So, there's a full kitchen staff. There's a nice dining hall. Everything's taken care of. The guys are eating really well. But one of the meals we want to bring up some type of animal, game animal, et cetera, and if possible, slaughter it there in the right way and humanely. And we've got several guys on the team who are expert deer skinners.
Hmm.
And so we brought up two mutton no firearms are allowed up there. And so I have to handle that, piece. I don't want guys up there, you know, competing on who gets to put down the mutton. So I've got to take that part and it's not fun. It's every year. It's not fun. It's a serious task. There's pressure because I want to do it correctly and make sure that the animal doesn't suffer. And then, so I think it's a learning experience for a lot of guys. We have about 115 guys or so right now, training camp that went with us. And we had about nine guys that chose to kind of head over there. We go away from camp, so nobody has to experience or see it if they don't want to see it, or they're just not interested, right? It's not some type of mandatory ceremony that we're
yeah.
conducting out there. But yeah, so Dom Butts and Dawson Menegatti, after the animals were put down, they got right on it and strung them up in trees and gutted them, skinned them, and got them ready. We had a lot of our Polynesian players prepared an underground oven, which they call an umu, and that worked really well. The meat was, if you know anything about mutton, it's, you know, it can turn out not great, and it was fantastic. It was moist. It was tasty. Probably should have seasoned it more, but we had plenty of seasoning to put on after, and a bunch of the guys took a bunch home, a bunch of the meat home with them and put it in the refrigerators.
Well, and what an experience too. You're talking about your players. You know, some guys are skinning, some guy preparing the, what is it called? The umu? Is that, mm-hmm. is that right?
Yes.
I mean, that can bring guys together and it's a unique experience. Let me ask you this, coach. Has anybody, expressed like being uncomfortable with this or parents or anything like that? Cause I'm a farm kid, like that stuff is normal to me, but not everybody takes it that way.
Right. And yes, nobody here yet, but when I first, got together with, Kalani Sitake at BYU and we planned out that program and we're putting it together from the very beginning, I said, hey, at Southern Utah, we did this camping trip. I thought it was really good team bonding right in the middle of camp. So he did it. We did it for 2 years. And he was adamantly against. So his first initial reaction was, we can't be up there sacrificing animals. Mm. And I totally got where he was coming from. And it was his choice, of course. But it was not, we still ate meat up there.
Right.
Is my point. And so yeah. I think, to do it responsibly, and to do it in a way that is humane and appropriate, I think can be a really good learning experience and a skill for a lot of players to maybe aspire to. You know, the ability to go out and hunt wild game or a deer, and obviously we're not going to go up there and hunt with 120 guys, right? And so we have to bring a domesticated animal. We did a pig last year, and we did, like I said, two sheep this year.
Well, and so many people, it's amazing to me. You know, you're like you said, you're eating meat anyway. That's happening anyway. A lot of people don't realize that. And it's funny, like PETA, I was going to ask, like, if PETA comes after you for this.
Right.
There's so many people that they go to the grocery store, they get their meat. They don't think about it.
Right.
Like, for us, it's just obvious. I mean, I was in 4-H, I was farm, ranch, all that stuff. I knew my pets were going to turn into something that was on my plate. You just, you grow up with that. Yeah. It's astonishing that so many people don't connect the dots sometimes. And
right.
I think that can be an experience by itself, but also getting everybody together away from practice, away from Greeley, and just get out and enjoy each other's company.
Right. Absolutely. I know there's political divides and rationale for eating meat, not eating meat, and whether you know, slaughter should be done in a slaughterhouse or up on the mountain. And I can tell you from my research, my belief is that those sheep lived a great life, and they lived a great last week or so as we had them, and were put down in a way that was the most humane way.
What were some of the other takeaways from the weekend? Because I saw the pictures online. It looked like everybody was having fun, relaxing. There was a little fishing competition, too,
yes.
I was told.
Well, we had trophies.
Yeah.
There was a fishing trophy. It was for most fish. But the two finalists, James Betchart and Makur Abram, they both had two fish. And at that time, most of the guys that were out of the fishing competition – And I wasn't there at the lake because I was helping with the umu and the animals. It was the same day. But somehow it had come down to the last two, and a lot of the guys that had dropped out were bored. And so they started swimming around. So obviously in that size lake, there were no more fish biting. It was
mm-hmm.
just all kinds of splashing, and guys were capsizing each other's boats on purpose. And it turned into a bunch of football players having fun at a lake. And so, Makur and James agreed that James's two fish that he had caught, and they were catch and release, obviously. James's two fish were much bigger than Makur's. And so, Makur conceded the victory to James. So James took home the fishing trophy.
Well, congratulations to James on that too. Cause I know, like, again, having all these players in here, they take this pretty seriously. So I would imagine these are all competitors. They were all viewing that as a pretty, pretty tough competition. I picture at the end of the day, and tell me if I'm wrong, you know, you're going through all your day's activities. At the end of the day, sitting by a fire or something like that, is there a
sure.
speech? Is there something
yeah.
you're saying to the guys to use this to kind of connect them?
Yeah, and that's really building up in the week or so before we go, when I talk to the team on brief occasions about, okay, this is what the objective of the camp out is. And preparing, making sure that they're ready, you know, and have the warm clothes because it can get cold. It didn't get terribly cold this year. It did the year before overnight. The lows got into the low 50s and some of the guys got pretty cold. So they were more prepared this year and didn't actually turn out needed to be. But we arrived there right about 1 or 2 o'clock and then have a meal, set up camp. The guys have to set up their own tents and obviously pull out their sleeping bags and cots and build their cots out and all that stuff. And then later that evening, we have a skit show. Every position group is required to submit at least one skit. Talent show, variety, cabaret, call it whatever you want. That's mandatory for each position group. Last year, there was a lot of misunderstanding, resistance, not so great skits. This year, the worst skit this year would have won the award last year.
Mm.
They were fantastic. The running backs started it off with tons of energy, and they actually ended up winning. Linebackers came in second, and then QBs. And the only rules are really, you know, respect women and then, and your teammates, and then coaches are fair game if that's kind of the direction you choose is to make fun of coaches.
Was there a roast kind of thing? Was there?
Oh,
some,
yeah, it's a roast.
There were, yeah. So some there the were coaches, some about the coaches?
Some of the coaches get it pretty good. I mean, we all got something. The players are particularly hard on, like, the graduate assistants, the student assistants, the volunteers, because they're just, it's kind of low-hanging fruit. You know, they're closer to their age. And I think in those guys' case, for a lot of them, a lot of our student assistant, graduate assistant, volunteer type guys are guys that played high school football.
Yeah.
And just, you know, college football is not in the cards for them, for whatever reason, height, weight, speed, something like that. But they want to be and are earning their stripes on the team. And so I think in a way it's endearing to have them part of the team and recognized and like, here's some idiosyncrasies that we see in you and we want to tease you on that. I thought it was good.
What was the best skit? What won? Can you just kind of give us?
So it was a great example because the I think some of the players misunderstood and said like, oh, it's got to be a coach's roast or that's the way they just chose to take it. The running backs took it in a different direction. They did just kind of a boot camp army scene. Hmm. They literally like wrote a skit like Saturday Night Live style and then executed it, but it was done with such energy. And then it did kind of a UNC cheer in there as well. They made fun of themselves. Hmm. Each guy kind of had a line to make fun of themselves. And I just thought for the whole team, it was kind of endearing. And then the linebackers were really upset because they did a really nice, well thought out coach's roast. And it was good and entertaining and the whole team loved it. But it didn't bring that same type of energy. And in some ways it didn't bring that same type of appeal because like Coach Fernandez is a guy that some of the players like to, you know, kind of make fun of because he's super passionate. You've been out there. You've seen
sure.
him, right? So everything he does is big and huge. And so he's pretty easy to kind of make fun of, to imitate. And the linebackers did a great job of that. And the defensive guys were kind of all in tune because they have unit meetings where all the defensive coaches are there. But the offensive coaches really don't know Coach Fernandez necessarily like that. And so they didn't get much out of it or Coach Hadley, you know. So the running back skit just had a broader appeal. And that's how I had to explain it to the linebackers who were pretty upset at my decision to give the trophy. There's a trophy up for that. There's a trophy for cornhole. There's a trophy for, horseshoes. And, you know, the skit show is a traveling trophy. It stays in the meeting room or the position coach's room during the year. And there are 12, nameplate placards on it. And the running backs have won the first 2 years.
I love that too. Cause you're getting guys that taking time to do this, you know, to sit down and go over this and then express themselves too. Cause I mean, fans look at these parents, not as much, but fans don't, we see them as football players. You don't think about all the other stuff, maybe what else they're into, that kind of thing. This gives them a chance, whether it's cornhole, fishing, or acting a little bit, gives them a chance to really express themselves through that outside of football because, yeah, football, you gotta make the main thing. I get that. But these guys are so much more to them than football. And some of them might go on and play beyond UNC, who knows? But most of them are going to go out into the workforce or whatever. So these are unique opportunities, I think, for guys to really showcase a little bit of who they are.
That's right. There's so much to it. That's a big part of it. The team bonding, the self-sufficiency. And that's where the animals come into play. And even the fishing, so many of our guys had never fished before. And then we've got this group of guys that fish all the time. If they get some spare time, you know, between practices or classes, they might go and get some fishing in. But those are skills as our players are exposed to those types of things. Those are skills that they can carry with them for life. And
yeah.
I don't know if any of us are ever going to be in a survival situation. I mean, times have changed, right? But those, I think those skills are meaningful and also, transcend to other areas of our life. The ability to, learn something that you might be uncomfortable or completely unfamiliar with, become competent at it, and then, enjoy it, I think is a pattern that we should all be striving to repeat throughout our lives.
You've talked a lot about on this podcast, Coach, like, hey, they don't make movies and stories about the teams that are supposed to win and then they win. I think of that comment a lot from you. And then I think of this camping trip, like week six, whatever, you know, it's a tight game. I'm not saying that you're going to use the camping trip in a speech or you're talking to Peter Castelli or anything like that, but those are things that maybe stick in the back of your mind where, hey, we bonded. We had this unique opportunity. We got away. We got to know each other a little bit more. And maybe, you know, they're able to use that, maybe not directly, but it's just, it's part of this process. We hear about it, team bonding. How can you do that? And I think this could be something that really helps out throughout the course of the season.
I believe it. You know, I probably talk too much about our experience at Southern Utah sometimes because it's just getting further and further in the rearview mirror. And, it's time to repeat that type of success, here. But I'm convicted that we have to do it differently here than at other places.
Yeah.
I was convicted of that when we were at Southern Utah for the same reasons. A completely non-competitive budget relative to our peers. Facilities, the big facility in football is the football stadium. And I would say overall UNC has really done a nice job in so many areas of facilities. I mean, we've got 9 practice fields with lights on them and a really nice weight room. And there's a lot in place for success, but the stadium is what makes the biggest impact in recruiting and a game day experience and home field advantage. And we're just not there. And so there are so many similar challenges. The idea that we would just do it like that, I would go and take, like, if Ryan Day, the head coach at Ohio State, or Steve Sarkisian, the head coach at Texas, if they wrote a book on how to win at Texas and Ohio State, there would just be, in my opinion, almost no relevance to our experience at UNC. And so that really does, I think, put me out there on a limb sometimes and exposed, because I'm trying to do things in such a different way, because I think it's necessary that when we're not successful on the field, it can be really easy, low-hanging fruit for players, media, fans, to point a finger at and say, well, he's not doing it right, you know? And I understand that, and it's part of what I signed up for.
Well, it is unique, and you have to find different ways. You know, the way you're recruiting, the way you're keeping guys at UNC, camping trips, things like that. You have to do something like unique to set you apart because of the budget constraints. I mean, we've discussed that a lot. It's a big deal. But trying to think outside the box and find different ways to inject that team bonding or whatever it may be, I mean, it's crucial. You have to find it.
Right. Yep. It's just got to be an unusual, unique experience. What we're trying to do is unique. What we did at Southern Utah was unique. It has not happened in the Big Sky before, and so it would be a unique and different and special experience. And all these players signed up for that. You didn't come to UNC for winning tradition. You came here to change a program, or because it was your best opportunity. And right now the buy-in level is so high for our players. I think the confidence level is high. I believe, to be fair, that it was going into last year. I really thought they believed, and I really thought we were a good football team, and just suffered injuries that we did not overcome in time. You know, other teams were in mid-season form, and we were kind of starting over there around game 3. And it really put a strain on all of our confidence.
Coming up, you know, next week, August 30th, you guys go up against Shadron State. It's a big game for so many reasons. It's the first game. It's a home game. Then you guys are on the road, not too far away, second game. You're just up in Fort Collins, but you're on the road for the next 3 weeks. So that Shadron State game, Coach, that's a big one for you guys to start the season off, because you're going to be road warriors after that.
It is, yeah. Winning at home is our number one goal, or I guess – We have a series of goals. It's really just two. When you talk about on-field results, win at home, and then the second one is add gold bricks. And for us, gold bricks are wins over ranked teams, or wins over FBS programs, or playoff wins. Those three things. For any of those victories, we put a gold brick up in the facility. In our first 2 years, we've only earned one gold brick, but there is one gold brick that the guys walk by every day as they enter the locker room. And so this Shadron game is, you know, goal number one, protect at home, win at home, learn to win at home and take pride in our home crowd, our home facility, and consider that the competitive advantage that it can be.
When does the game plan start to, because I know training camp is one thing, but when does the looks, the mentions of Shadron State start to take place? When are you putting together that game plan? The last couple of weeks, or how does that process work?
As coaches, it's really, prior to spring ball. So we have recruiting that really gets super hot or heated and busy in the month of January. The signing date is early February. And then from February until we start spring ball, which is generally, let's just say that's a month most years, that month is an emphasis on game planning for our first four opponents. And the reason we say four is typically the actual breakdown that we use when we look for tendencies on the opponent, when we the film clips that we're going to show our players. If you do more than four games, it gets kind of unwieldy, and mm-hmm. it can be you're using games that are over a month ago, and so sometimes you're seeing a lot of players that aren't even showing up on the field anymore. And so for that reason, like our fifth opponent, we don't really want to look at what they did last year at all. But our first four opponents, we really need to have a great understanding of what they did last year, what their character has been. Obviously, in game two, three, and four, we're going to kind of check it against this year's film. And if there's not a lot of carryover, we kind of can our preliminary game plan. But in the case of game one, and Shadron's doing this with us as well, it is a 100% educated guess only on the information you have last year. And then you pay attention to the recruiting and see if there's anything out there available media-wise, as some of the key players that are, you know, representing Shadron State at the RMAC media days, stuff like that, or, you know, try to figure out, okay, who are some of their top guys? Who are some of their leaders? Who are some of the guys we have to pay attention to?
How difficult is it now? Because I'm doing, you know, research. Next week, we're really going to dive into previews for all the teams that we talk about on a daily basis. But there's so many transfers. There's so many guys that maybe they're coming from smaller schools. Maybe they're coming from bigger schools that just weren't getting playing time. How much more difficult is that to scout teams in 2025 when we do have the craziness that is the transfer portal?
So this is just from my perspective, and I think it's accurate, but I'll give a caveat. I'm not sure it's accurate. I think at like, you know, Shadron's a Division II team in the best conference in the country in Division II. So very competitive football team. We have full respect for them. They appear to be still recruiting for the most part, like we are. They're going to recruit high school kids. They're going to try to develop and retain them. They're going to take the transfers that they feel like they need at certain positions. They're going to use the portal and some junior college recruiting as their kind of blended transfer efforts. That's about where we're at too. Obviously we looked at Colorado State and South Dakota, and then several of the teams in our league, we pay close attention to them. Colorado State seems to be really, you know, that there's a lot of guys into the portal and then a lot of guys coming from the portal, and they've got a coaching change on defense, right? And so that's really like, I don't feel like it's an educated guess. I feel like so much of what we're going to know about them is going to come from their first game.
Yeah.
And then there are teams in our league that are really set up a lot like Colorado State, where, you know, Idaho got poached big time from the transfer portal, for example. Sacramento State did. And then they replenished from the portal. Didn't really go lean heavily into the high school recruiting or the junior college recruiting. So I think just even within our league, there's such a disparity on where it's going now. And just 10 years ago, it was high school or JC. Those
yeah,
were your options.
Sure.
There was no transfer portal. Because guys, it was so rare to get in there. It wasn't called the portal then, but to transfer, you either had to transfer up a level or down a level. And up a level included a penalty, and down a level, you know, it wasn't what you were building your recruiting class around, is guys transferring down.
Yeah. Well, I think the amount of work too now, I mean, like you said, paying attention to different media outlets, which players are standing out, who are they bringing to their media days. Those are all maybe you always did that stuff, but now you really do rely on that. As far your opponents, who knows, they might be listening to this show, the players that you've brought on. I know typically we started with kind of the bigger players, the Peter Castellis, those kind of guys. And then as we progressed throughout the shows, we were bringing younger guys on, whatever. But I would imagine that part of the game has changed too, where you are paying attention to a lot of what what the media is saying, who they're talking to more often.
There's just more media available.
Yeah. I mean,
look at how quickly we put this together. We've been doing it now for months,
yeah. You know,
years now, and it's been so spectacular for me and has made an impact on our program. But back to your statement, it kind of popped up out of nowhere. And it wasn't long ago when it was like just newsprint. And then, you know, I can remember when more newsprint was showing up online. And then that was a tool and a resource for coaches. We were looking up things online, news articles on our opponents. And now any player at any time can decide they want to get on social media and talk about practice and how it went today and their spot on the depth chart or something like that.
Yeah,
so
sure.
There's a lot of information out there.
Yeah, no question about it. Talking about the podcast growth, it's been cool because, you know, a lot of parents, I think of Miles McClarity's mom, Faith. She's actually going to join the guys on Friday. She's going to come in studio for their Wine at Nine segment. That's what Tanner was telling me.
Love it.
She listens to the programs, all of them now, because of the podcast. I'm out at practice Friday and you guys were practicing and you're in the stadium and I'm looking up and I'm seeing quite a bit of people were there to watch practice. And I don't know how normal that is, Coach, but that seemed like quite a few people that were out there checking this out. And that was cool to see. So, there is just a different vibe, a different buy-in, not only from like the communication side of things, but it seems like the fans and the parents, it does feel like a giant family at this stage.
Yeah. Different places, different objectives, right, and strategies. But, you know, if you take the Division I programs in the state for football, Colorado and Colorado State have signed, you know, less than five in-state prospects in the years that I've been at UNC. And we're over 50 now that we've signed in that same period of time. And again, not comparing saying better or worse, but for us, that brings a more local element. That brings a regional cohesiveness. That brings parents in for an opportunity. If we have a scrimmage practice, they know about it. They're within an hour's drive. The vast majority of our team have parents within an hour's drive. And so we are seeing that. And I think it's going to start to make a difference on game day. And it's not my primary objective, but UNC needs more students. And a winning football program with local Colorado high school, former high school football players is going to bring more students. I've seen it. I've lived it. And I've seen that success build a campus, build a student body. And it's one of our goals as a coaching staff is to prove that we can do that here.
Well, and that's what I've loved. I mean, we've talked about it for years, well before you got here, Coach, was, you know, get local guys in here. And I know it's not all about Colorado. We've talked about that, but that is a built-in fan base that you're getting. If you get local dudes and their families are living, you know, like you said, about an hour away or so, they're more likely to come to games, and that's going to be more people in the stands to watch. There's maybe their schoolmates, you know, followed their career, and then they get to come take an opportunity to come watch this team as well. So I think those are obvious things. And then when you first got here, that's what you said. That was a mission, and you have done that, and I'm seeing it already. It's really cool to see that.
It's we. The football program, the success of the football program, transcends through to the regional high schools. I went to a graduation party for a good friend who's a professor on campus, their son, and he was going to Michigan, and they're all wearing the Michigan stuff, and it just kind of struck me, okay, everybody knows Michigan's color scheme mascot, mm-hmm. Everybody knows Ohio State's color scheme mascot, in part, even though he's a great academic student and he's going there, you know, probably primarily for academics, there's also that immediately like, oh, you're going to Michigan, and there's some things that you think of right away. And even he said, I can't wait to go to the football games, right, as I was talking to him. And part of that's probably because I'm the football coach, right? But I think he was saying that to a lot of people. It's a fun experience there. Well, you know, Michigan's a world-class institution, but so is Penn. What's their color scheme?
Yeah.
Who's their mascot, right?
Yeah.
What about Dartmouth? Anybody know their their color scheme.
What is it? Yeah, what is Dartmouth's color scheme?
It's green.
Okay.
But, you know, I'm a football coach.
Yeah.
And I know Penn's too.
Yeah, Penn, yeah, sure.
Navy and red.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Penn, I know, but Dartmouth, yeah.
So you take all the Ivy League, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
like what is their mascot and what does their stadium look like and what is their football tradition, right? And so it's not that you, my point is not that you have to have football, but there are a lot of schools, that have built their reputation, their national, their world-class reputation, built their student body in part by that front porch of the university, which is football. And that's why it's so critical as part of our mission to be successful at UNC and see kind of that rising tide that raises all ships at this university.
Yeah, when I came up here in 2005, I think that was the first year that UNC switched over to Division I FCS. And then that's not really part of the story, but I don't remember having this outreach of sports. When I'm just a regular student. I wasn't walking around constantly seeing, you know, game day, this weekend, whatever. I've talked to so many people over the last few years, and that seems to have changed a lot, where we are promoting and advertising more to the students about our games, doing unique things with our student athletes to get people involved. That's been another boost I've seen over the last couple of years.
Well, the success of other ticketed sports, like all of our revenue sports have largely been successful at UNC. You consider men's basketball and women's volleyball and then wrestling. These have, you know, like long established fan bases. And I saw that occur at, you know, Southern Utah when I was there. Our first championship, we didn't have great attendance. We kind of toiled away the whole season, won a championship. Nobody knew about it. The next year, we weren't quite as good. We were still a good football team, a winning football team, but the stadium was packed all the time. And so I think you see that in other sports. And I think that those other sports are greasing the skids for us too. Like people are interested in UNC athletics.
Yeah.
There are some of our other sports go and beat Colorado State and beat Colorado. And maybe that's not the same dynamic with FCS football, right? Because we're dealing with less scholarships than what Colorado State would have. So in some ways, maybe it's a bigger opportunity to compete and play in those games. But my point is the success of a lot of sports at UNC, I think for our football players are, it's an example of what we want to be. We can almost taste it and see the success of those sports. And in many cases, those coaches and those players, the way they comport themselves and the way they win those championships, it's a fine example for what we need to be.
Well, it starts with, obviously a lot of this starts with the coaches. And I won't name a particular coach here, but years ago, I remember, it was signing day and we were scheduled to have the head football coach of the Bears on at the time to come in studio. We were downtown Greeley at that point. He, for whatever reason, he didn't want to do it. So he sent, you know, his defensive coordinator and offensive coordinator, and that was fine. But I think of you. I think of Steve Smiley. I think of Lindsey Oates. Just to name a few. And how active you guys are. Your willingness every single week to come in here and do this podcast. Smiley does the same thing. Coach Oates reached out to me. I'm going to be doing the honorary serve for the UNC CSU game.
Nice.
So
that's
I might ask some
that's
tips
tricky,
on
by
that.
By the way, I can't give you any tips. I netted mine.
I'm definitely doing the jump serve, 100%.
That's,
like there's no. I'm doing it. I'm going
incredible.
For it.
I can't wait to see it. I'll be there.
Is it September 3rd? I think that's a Tuesday night.
Okay.
So yeah. I'm going to need some support there.
Yeah. Because
I'm launching this thing. I tweeted it out. I said, I hope that arena has thick walls because I am blasting that volleyball. I hope it doesn't go through the wall.
The only advice I have, yeah, go higher and farther than you think you need to. I got up there and thought, you know, it's a women's sport. I'm a big, strong guy. I'm athletic. This is not going to be a problem. I'd never practiced it, never done it. Volleyball is not my thing. And I just launched that thing right into the net. And
did you have to start from where they start, or can you start wherever you want?
You know, nobody was there, like, directing me or anything like that. It's just kind of, you know, if I was on my own. I think I could have cheated up, but that didn't occur to me because it didn't seem like a challenge until after I failed. And now I'm like, oh, man, if I could ever get another opportunity to
well,
redeem myself.
Well, somebody told me, they're like, you can serve it from wherever. I was like, that, how dare you? I am going from where everybody else, and we'll see. I haven't done that in a while, so we'll see how it goes.
I need to ask her if I can do like a ceremonial first spike. You know, can she set me up and jump up?
You could join me and I'll just set, I'll do the set and then you go up and spike. You kind of have the body type of like those beach volleyball players. Like you could be one of those guys that dominate.
I feel like I would have a higher percentage of successfully spiking it than I would, serving it. But then again, the serve was so surprisingly difficult and such a massive epic failure that maybe the spike would be the same thing. Maybe I'd be tangled up in the net or something goofy like that. The skill level that those volleyball girls have, you know, there's a lot that can translate in different sports and stuff between men and women. But such a high level of respect. That's a highly skilled sport, as is, you know, the women's golf, really all women's sports. But I think a lot of guys can relate to women's basketball. Like, oh, yeah, maybe I can do that. I can go out there and compete like that. You don't just roll out on the volleyball court and know what you're doing. You don't just roll out at a softball field. If you're a baseball player, like, there's a big difference in the speed of the pitch and the angle that it's coming in. Our football players found that out. We did a little exercise in the off season with the women's softball team, and none of our guys could even make contact with those pitches.
They make it look so easy. Like in volleyball, when they're serving, they just make it look so easy. So when they do actually hit the net, it is such a surprise to see it.
Right.
And you can be critical or whatever, but my goodness. So in all seriousness, I'm just hoping, yes, I can get it over the net. That would be phenomenal. If I don't, then, you know, it is what it is. But I'm not nervous yet, but I'll get there. I know you don't like the word nervous, but I'm definitely going to be nervous, Coach.
Hey, that's, you're right. I'll try to get a seat. I love at the volleyball games. I love sitting, on in football call the back line. I don't know if they call it that, but you can see that serve. You can't really see it from the sideline angle, but those serves, when the girls do it, they move like up and down, back and forth. It's like a knuckleball.
Yeah.
And it's incredible that they can even, you know, get a first hit on it, because it looks really difficult.
Yeah. Well, we'll give it our best try. I've got some special shoes that I'll be wearing for this thing. So hopefully they can take me, my Nikola Jokic shoes. They got to take me through this thing.
Yeah, you're set.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could fail with Nicola's shoes.
I wore them to the golf course the other day, and that was my best golf game I've ever had. And it wasn't good.
Eight holes in one?
Yeah, pretty much. That's always the goal. But going back, my point is, you guys as coaches, I've noticed it for a few years now. And you and I, when I first reached out and said, let's grab breakfast and talk, and then organically we're like, let's do a weekly podcast. And you always talk about how much this podcast means to you, but for me, it's like, it's an honor. The fact that you get up earlier and you come into the studio, you know the guys. I think we're going to give you and Coach Smiley a key here pretty soon.
Big time.
That is so special to me, and it is so important, though, at the same time. At this school, any school really, but at UNC, the coaches really need to do that. Be outward and constantly talking to people. You come out to this Autism Dad's Night Out thing. It was a no-brainer for you. You're like, yeah, I'll be there. You show up and everybody there is just hanging on your every word. Those kind of things are just so special, and I think that's where you start to see this turn.
I'm so glad you see that, and I feel that, and I want that. I'm working for that. The podcast has been beneficial for the team. It's been beneficial for the people that are listening. I know several parents listen. Looking forward to the season where I can name more names, kind of on who's performing well in games. Sometimes it can be almost a negative when I bring up names from practice, because I think there are so many guys that are excelling at practice, and those that I leave out are, you know, kind of wondering why. But in games, there are a stat line. There's a stat line, and there's something to kind of speak directly to that's a little more objective than subjective. And on a personal level, the podcast has been at times cathartic for me. You know, my wife and I try to have like a series, a show, a Netflix or something like that, that we watch. And we don't get a lot of nights to do it, but when we can get a night in and some, you know, some time during the season where I get home at a decent hour and throw it on. So it's going to take us forever to get through it because there's so many seasons, but we started like The Sopranos. And we've tried that a few times and thought, it's no good. It's no good. But now we've given it enough of a shot where it's starting to get better. And sometimes I feel like, you know, Tony goes, there's therapy in almost every show. Sometimes this has been cathartic for me because you'll bring up some perspectives or ask a question, and then it'll touch a nerve, you know, especially with the lack of success we've had. And so to be able to talk through that. You know, you have to understand most of my day when I leave here, I'm the top. I'm the leader.
Yeah.
You know, unless Feinstein or Darren Dunn come by my office, I have to be a model of confidence and a model of work ethic. It's high pressure to deliver all day long. And so to be able to sit in here and get real and talk about, you know, hey, I'm failing. We failed. Here's the reasons why. Here's where I'm trying to get better. In many ways, it's been helpful for me on a personal level that I did not foresee.
Well, and I think back to the win over Weber State last year. I mean, you talked about how emotional that was. Not necessarily like, oh, joyous that we won. You beat
right.
a really good team. I think a ranked team.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the gold brick game, right? But I remember you talking about it like, it was almost just like, my gosh, it was so hard to get that win. How do we keep doing? Can we keep doing that? And you really opened up. I think it's cool because I'll go out to practice and I see football coach Ed Lamb. Not that you're completely different, but you're in charge out there. I'm just kind of standing back watching. Here in the podcast studio, you relax a little bit. So it is really kind of fascinating to see that switch of how you operate.
Yeah. It's fascinating to hear you say that because it's not deliberate.
No.
But I do feel that, you know, from the moment where I kind of get out of my vehicle on campus, the way I walk, the way I talk, who I reach out to, the things that I say, they all have meaning and value and detriment if I'm doing and saying the wrong things. So there is an effort to be on point, so to speak.
Coach, always appreciate it. I love it so much. It's an honor to do it. Like I said, next week, when we get in the studio, let's look at Shadron State a little bit deeper. Give us what you can. Maybe get into that depth chart a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe talk about
chart.
The old depth chart. You know, I'm into that. We start breaking it down next week. Next time we talk, we'll be game week, and I can't wait for next Wednesday.
Excited for that.
All right, Coach. I'll let you jump on with the fellas. Good morning, Noco. Always appreciate you, and good luck throughout the week as you guys prepare for that first home game of the first game of the season.
Thanks, Brady.
All right.
See you soon.
Thanks, Coach.
Football 52 is brought to you by Mark Larson, State Farm Insurance.
This is head coach of the Bears, Ed Lamb, and I want to tell you about my friend, Mark Larson, with State Farm Insurance. Mark grew up in Greeley and is always supporting the Bears and our wonderful community. When it comes to local, Mark gets it. A State Farm agent since 1982, Mark's passion is to help educate individuals about their insurance need and structuring a personal price plan on home and auto insurance. You want to work with the best? Then call Mark today at 356-8700 or visit his website, marklarsoninsurance.com.